Wilson Argro arrived at Trumbull in an unmarked green van, handcuffed with two marshals pulling at his elbows. He'd flown with his escorts from Miami to Jacksonville, of course, at the expense of the taxpayers. According to his paperwork, he had served 4 months of a 60-month sentence for bank fraud. He had requested a transfer for reasons that were not clear, but his reasons were of no concern to anyone at Trumbull. He was just another low-security prisoner in the federal system. They moved around all the time. He was 39 years old, divorced, college-educated, and his home address, for prison records, was in Coral Gables, Florida. His real name was Kenny Sands, an 11-year veteran of the CIA, and though he'd never seen the inside of a prison, he'd had much tougher assignments than Trumbull. He'd be there a month or two, then request another transfer. Argro maintained the cool facade of an old prison hand as he was processed, but his stomach churned. He'd been assured that violence was not tolerated at Trumbull, and he could certainly take care of himself, but prison was prison. He suffered through a one-hour orientation by an assistant warden, then was given a quick tour of the grounds. He began to relax when he saw Trumbull for himself. The guards had no guns, and most of the inmates looked rather harmless. His cellmate was an old man with a spotty white beard, a career criminal who'd seen many prisons and loved Trumbull. He told Argro he planned to die there. The man took Argro to lunch and explained the vagaries of the menu. He showed him the game room, where groups of thick men bunched around folding tables studying their cards, every one with a cigarette stuck to the lips.
Gambling's illegal, his cellmate said with a wink.
They walked to the lifting area outdoors, where the younger men sweated in the sun, polishing their tans while their muscles expanded. He pointed to the track in the distance and said,
"You gotta love the federal government."
He showed Argro the library, a place he'd never visited, and he pointed to a corner and said,
"That's the law library."
"Who uses it?" Argro asked.
"We usually have some lawyers here. Right now we have some judges, too."
"Judges?"
"Three of them."
The old man had no interest in the library. Argro followed him to the chapel, then around the grounds again. Argro thanked him for the tour, then excused himself and returned to the library, which was empty except for an inmate mopping a floor. Argro went to the corner and opened a door to the law library. Joe Roy Spicer glanced up from his magazine and saw a man he'd never seen before.
"Looking for something?"
he asked, with no effort at being helpful. Argro recognized the face from the file, an ex-justice of the peace, caught stealing bingo profits. What a lowlife.
"I'm new," he said, forcing a smile. "Just got here. This is the law library?" "It is." "I guess anybody can use it, huh?"
"I guess,"
Spicer said.
"You a lawyer?"
"Nope, a banker." A few months earlier, Spicer would have hustled him for some legal work, under the table, of course. But not now. They no longer needed the nickel and dime stuff. Argro looked around and did not see Beach and Yarber. He excused himself and returned to his room. Contact was made. Lake's plan to rid himself of any memories of Ricky and their ill-fated correspondence depended upon someone else. He, Lake, was simply too scared and too famous to sneak away again in the middle of the night, in a disguise, in the back of a taxi, dashing through the suburbs to an all-night mailbox. The risks were too great. Plus, he seriously doubted if he could shake the Secret Service anymore. He couldn't count the number of agents now assigned to protect him. Count? Hell, he couldn't see them all. The young lady's name was Jane. She joined the campaign in Wisconsin and had quickly worked her way into the inner circle. A volunteer at first, she now earned $55,000 a year as a personal aide to Mr. Lake, who trusted her completely. She seldom left his side, and they'd already had two little chats about Jane's future job in the White House. At the right moment, Lake would give Jane the key to the box rented by Mr. Al Conyers, and instruct her to get the mail, close out the rental, and leave no forwarding address. He would tell her it was a box he'd rented in an effort to monitor the sale of classified defense contracts, back when he was convinced the Iranians were buying data they should never see, or some such tale. She would believe him because she wanted to believe him. If he were incredibly lucky, there would be no letter from Ricky. The box would be forever closed. And if a letter was waiting for Jane, and if she was the least bit curious, Lake would simply tell her he had no idea who the person was. She would ask nothing further. Blind allegiance was her strong suit. He waited for the right moment. He waited too long.